So I'm going to be talking about some cosmological signatures of interacting dark sectors inspired by cosmological tensions. And this is work I've done with some of the collaborators. So the starting point of our work is, in particular, these two significant tensions in cosmological data. So there's the H-naught tension and the sigma-8 tension, and I'll go over more about these tensions. And so I pulled these plots sort of from the snow mass paper, and so these are all the measurements. And so it is, you know, on the experimental side, there needs to be, you know, independent direct measurements to verify that these tensions are real. And so that's sort of the state of things now. But I'm going to take maybe what I'll call the more optimistic take. And I'll assume that these tensions are pointing to new physics in some way. So I'll assume these tensions are real. And on the experimental side, you know, with new measurements and changes in the types of measurements, maybe the error bars will change and the means will shift slightly. But I'll assume that underlying this is the fact that there is some new physics, that lambda CDM isn't the complete description of our cosmology today. And so then I'm going to talk about a little bit about what I think this new physics could look like. So let me start with the H-naught tension. So if you haven't already heard, there's this discrepancy between the direct measurement of H-naught, which is the expansion rate of the universe today. And the direct measurement is direct in the sense that it's insensitive to your choice of cosmological model. And of course, then there's the value that one can extrapolate from the CMB, and that's almost entirely dependent on your choice of cosmological model. And currently, if I pick one of the values, so the sort of longstanding value from Riess and the Shoes collaboration, and I compare it to the most recent fit to the CMB with Planck, we find that the tension is at something like 5 sigma. And so, just to give a little brief overview of what happens with the direct measurement. So the direct measurement, the goal is to measure H-naught locally. And so the idea is that locally, if I plot the velocity and distance of nearby objects, the slope of that plot will give me H-naught. And of course, velocities are easy to get, but distances can be tricky in astrophysics. And so people use a number of different ways to try to figure out the distance to nearby objects. And the Riess value that I mentioned uses Cepheids and type 1 supernova. And the idea there is if you know how bright something should be and then you measure how bright it is, then you can get a measure of how far away it is. And of course, we don't actually know. The absolute magnitude is an overall a constant that's unknown. And so we calibrate using another distance indicator, which is Cepheids, and they have a characteristic relation between their luminosity and period. And so that's the basic idea with distance measurements. And And now the thing that we're sort of interested in is the CMB measurement. So this is sort of a rough cartoon of what's going on. Obviously, the CMB measurement is like a little bit more complicated, but the basic idea is, you know, what does the CMB measure directly? Well, it measures theta s, so the angular size of the sound horizon at recombination. And so the angular size is related to the linear size of the sound horizon at recombination and the distance to the CMB. And RS, the linear size, is determined entirely from theory, so it's an integral over early physics, basically, as I've written here. So so you have some integral over early physics, and the distance to the CMB is roughly proportional to 1 over H-naught. So the distance to the CMB is also of course, an integral over Hubble at late times, but it's been found that you can't change the late physics significantly enough to solve the H-naught tension. And so roughly we keep the late physics fixed, And we just change the early physics. And so what happens is you keep theta s fixed. And so for a theta fixed theta s, you have rs times h naught is constant. And so any change you make in the early physics creates a change to rs, and that's compensated by a proportional change in h naught that your model gets from the CMB. And so how do we change Hubble? Of course, Hubble from the Friedmann equations is directly proportional to the square root of the energy densities of things in the universe. And so I want to increase the energy density somewhere in this time interval, basically, to change RS. And because it's dominated sort of at the end at recombination, we need to make changes sort of around that area. And so what form of extra energy could we add? Well, the simplest extensions of lambda CDM are just to add extra radiation. So in addition to the photons, we already know about some dark radiation, which we consider to be the neutrinos. And so a way to parameterize the amount of extra radiation that you have is in this term N effective. And so that's comparing the energy density in your extra radiation to the energy density of one neutrino. And so in lambda CDM, we get that N effective is approximately 3, which corresponds to the 3 standard model neutrinos. And this necessarily what I'm looking at when we look at extra radiation is that it's dark, so there's no direct coupling to the photons. Okay, so now when we look at different types of interactions, so these are dark sector models for dark radiation. We can consider free streaming radiation, which means that the dark sector has no interactions within itself, as well as no interactions with the standard model. Or the other limit is we can consider strongly interacting radiation, so the dark sector has self-interactions, which are very strong, and it behaves basically like a perfect fluid. And so the CMB can distinguish between these two types of interactions, actually, based on some things that I'll talk about. In particular, they have a different sound speed for perturbations in this fluid. And so these different sound speeds contribute to two different phase shifts in the CMB. In particular, the photon perturbations have a sound speed of square root of 1/3 because they're tightly coupled to the baryons early on. And so if you add some extra radiation that has a different sound speed than that, that can change the phase shifts a little bit. It'll pull on the photon-baryon fluid interactions in some way. Okay, and so lambda CDM with extra radiation is a model that's been sort of heavily studied, obviously, in the past because it's very simple. And the idea is that free streaming radiation is too constrained to solve H naught. But if you look at interacting radiation, so this is the other limit that I considered. So you have a dark sector with just interacting radiation, which behaves like a perfect fluid. That actually seems to work a lot better than free streaming radiation, but you still have something like a 3 sigma tension with the Hubble tension. And so we're trying to do a little bit better than that. So we'll look at models with interact. So we think we want to look at dark radiation solutions, but interacting radiation seems to work a lot better. So we're focusing on interacting radiation solutions, which is interesting from a model perspective, because obviously one can build much more interesting models for interacting radiation than for radiation, which has absolutely no interaction. Okay, and then, so the sigma 8 tension, there's similarly a tension between the direct values of sigma 8, which measures the growth of fluctuations at a particular scale. And so there's this direct measurement, which comes from weak lensing surveys. And there's a value, again, that you get from the lambda CDM fit to the CMB. And this one is also something like 3 sigma now, but depends on which values you want to use.
Hi, Melissa.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Mina from online. Sorry I couldn't be there.
That's okay.
I have a question for you. Are there a few tensions from the Hubble and this independent? I'm not very, very familiar. So are they completely independent from each other, or is it related to the...
The direct measurements are completely independent measurements, yes. I guess they're related in that the tensions both assume a lambda CDM, but they are measuring different observables.
Okay, thank you.
Are they correlated? Like, do you have a plot of maybe like H naught versus sigma 8 or something?
Well, that's a sort of model dependent statement, right?
Yeah,
so yes.
This is what I was actually asking. Yeah, whether they are correlated, if you had a plot like that, yeah.
I have a plot which I'll show later, but yeah, that's a model independent. So yeah, that's some models they're correlated in the opposite direction. Some they're correlated in a different direction. But
okay.
CDM, I think that means.
So yeah, so lambda CDM does go in the direction. Where increasing H naught gives you a lower sigma 8.
The Planck measurements?
Lambda CDM fit to the CMB. So the matter power spectrum is the sigma 8 thing, right? So the matter power spectrum is measuring sort of average over densities. The growth of these over densities at some particular scale, and so sigma 8 is at approximately eight inverse metric parsecs. So this is scales. So the turnover in the matter power spectrum, if you're not familiar, is due to equality. So these are scales that enter before equality. And so the actual parameter that we measure is not sigma 8, but S 8. So that's about a sigma, but there's a sigma 8 times a proportion, which accounts for the overall amplitude of the matter power spectrum. So, it's some dimensionless thing. Yeah, sorry, I meant to take out the things. Yeah, So the dimensionless thing, goes like that. And so how can dark matter, a common solution to suppress the growth of fluctuations at sigma 8 is to add interactions for the dark matter. So the idea is that lambda CDM predicts more structure than we actually see. And so we want to suppress the growth of this structure. And so if the dark matter is interacting with radiation, then this gives the dark matter some additional pressure. So In lambda CDM, the dark matter is treated as having sort of approximately zero kinetic energy, and so there's no pressure. But if the radiation gives the dark matter some pressure, this slows the growth of perturbations at some time. And so this can suppress the matter power spectrum at scales relevant to S8. This is the direct measurement summary that I sort of just want to show. So the gray things correspond to the direct measurements. So this is the one for S8, and this is the one for H naught. And these correspond to fits to the CMB with and without priors on H naught and S8. So the red is without the priors, and the blue is including these priors on the direct measurements. The idea is that, you know, we want to be somewhere in this overlapping region once we pick a different model than lambda CDM. This sort of shows the correlation with H naught and S8 in lambda CDM.
Sorry, what are the priors? Where did they come from?
The direct measurement priors?
Oh. Yeah, so what's the difference between the red and the blue exactly? No, I didn't follow.
So the red we just fit to the CMB, and in the blue we did the CMB plus we added sort of a Bayesian prior corresponding to the direct measurement.
Oh, I see.
So that'll obviously like pull it to the direct measurement thing. But even with that, you find that you're sort of very far from the H-naught region. And so to just summarize, you know, the story here seems to be that, you know, the anomalies suggest that there's some interactions in a dark sector. So in the Hubble tension, if I want to look at sort of simple models with extra radiation, I have to look at interacting radiation. And for S8, if I want to solve that, the simplest solutions are having the dark matter interact with radiation. And so the interacting dark sectors sort of give the most natural solutions to both of these tensions. And so that's sort of our starting point. And so when you have an interacting dark sector, we think that a natural thing to expect is a mass threshold. So if you have a dark sector with more than one component and there's different masses, then you'll find that because of, you know, if they're interacting, you'll find that when the temperature of the universe reaches the mass of the massive particle, they will annihilate into the lighter particles. And so you'll see this change in the degrees of freedom of your sector. And so, of course, in the standard model, we have something like, depending on how you want to count the phase transitions, but you have something like 11 mass thresholds between TeV and MeV. And so this corresponds to, of course, like, you know, the quarks, the pions, all those things. And so these, you know, these mass thresholds exist in the standard model. And so we think, you know, if we're looking at interacting dark sectors, then we might also expect to see something like a mass threshold here. And so we're interested in if this helps with the tension. And so our starting point is sort of the simplest interacting dark sector. And so we have two particle species, and one of them is massive, and the other is massless. And the massless particle is the fermion, and the massive particle is the scalar. And we want this mass threshold to happen during the CMB time. So we're looking at masses on order of the EV. And so the light scalar sort of motivated the Wessomino dark radiation. So this is the simplest interacting supersymmetric theory. And so the idea is that you have this Yukawa coupling between the scalar and the fermion. And when the temperature of the universe reaches the scalar decays into the fermion and then sort of disappears from the bath. And this heats the fermion. And then, of course, after the scalar disappears, we still have this dimension 6 operator corresponding to self-interactions in the fluid. So we have we always have a strongly interacting dark sector. But we've added some dynamics which correspond to a mass threshold. And so we'll see if that helps. So now I'm going to talk a little bit more about the cosmology. So what does this look like on the cosmology side, this model that we have? So at the mass threshold, we find that you have still an interacting fluid, but now one of your particles becomes massive, and so it's non-relativistic approximately. And so if you remember, relativistic radiation redshifts like 8 to the negative 4, and non-relativistic goes like 8 to the negative 3. And so near the mass threshold, you have a mix of relativistic and non-relativistic particles, and so you're going to redshift slightly between matter and radiation, but the key is that to see is that it's actually redshifting slightly slower than radiation in this intermediate period, and so that means that we get a step in N-effective. So N-effective is the energy density as compared to a standard model neutrino, and so that's always redshifting like radiation during our time, and so you see because it's redshifting slightly slower during the mass threshold, you find that there is an increase of N-effective here at the step. And so this is what's happening at the background level in the cosmology. And then at the perturbation level, you can make a similar argument about what happens to the sound speed and the equation of state. Because you have non-relativistic particles in your fluid, you find that there's sort of a temporary decrease in the sound speed and equation of state. Okay, and so another effect that we sort of want to talk about is phase shifts in the CMB. So we know that the CMB measures the peaks of the locations pretty precisely, and so phase shifts are the CMB data is very sensitive to phase shifts.
Can I ask you something? So the principle, this sector has the same temperature than the standard model early on, or does it matter?
The dark sector?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's basically, let me go back here. So the model parameters here are then an effective and a transition. These are free parameters in our model. And so once you set an effective, you basically set the ratio of the neutrino temperature to the dark sector temperature today. And so then the scaling is just determined by the physics.
In the scalar, do you need it to be the whole of dark matter? Is the scalar the whole of your dark matter?
So this is just the radiation sector right now I'm talking about, yeah. Yeah, so right now I haven't...
Or massless in this picture.
The what is massless?
The fermions are massless in this
picture. The fermions are, yeah.
And so is like the, is the number density of the scalars like large enough to prevent the fermions also from free streaming, or?
So you mean during the, or after? Yeah, so during you have...
They're tightly coupled to each other, you're saying. But then once the scalars annihilate or go away, then the fermions start free streaming.
No. So you still have this four-point interaction, the key is this coupling strong enough to maintain these interactions, and it is. So we always consider couplings that are strong enough such that this sector is always in equilibrium.
Okay, I see. But the fermions I shouldn't think of as free streaming neutrinos. I should think of them as a tightly coupled species with some isotropic pressure, with some vanishing anisotropic stress.
Right, exactly. So this is you always have a perfect fluid, so there's no higher moments after the L equals one, basically, because these couplings are large enough to maintain that.
You're not going to bubble to this thing. Because somehow I thought that you were going to...
We are. I just haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. Yeah. So this is...
How strong do you need it to be? I mean, what is the energy scale that controls it? Where does it come from? Does it come from integrating out phi, or it's an additional interaction?
No, it's just integrating out phi. So, I guess it's approximately order one couplings. Constants.
Okay, so just one phi, I think.
Yeah.
That's enough for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So this is exactly.
Can you say a bit more about the theory? So you call it semi-supersymmetry, but supersymmetry is broken. Is phi and psi in the same multiple in supersymmetry? In this, M phi breaks supersymmetry. So why don't you have quadratic corrections to the mass? I mean, how is the sector produced too? Because you're ignoring phi vets.
So the supersymmetry is broken at some scale. We didn't specify the scale. I think there are models in which, if you get corrections, it depends on how you break the supersymmetry, but there are, gauge mediated supersymmetry breaking terms which give you masses of order the phi of EV scale. We didn't write down exactly how this is generated in the UV. Is that your question, or?
Yeah. And also about the cosmology, what about phi vets?
phi, we don't suppose that there's any phi vev. So this is, I mean, so yeah, I guess the idea is we're just starting with you know, an interacting sector which has two different particle species, and so I can write down a number of different, you know, effective theories that give me that. And this is the effective theory we chose, but the dynamics we really care about is just that you have one massive particle and one massless particle, and the massive particle needs to have a mass around an EV.
So when I'm asking how is the sector produced, because cosmologically, I mean, up to some cutoff, I mean, phi can easily get the web kicked away from the minimum. So you have a minimum abundance in the sector. So how is the sector produced?
I mean, it could just be in thermal equilibrium with the standard model or something at some very high temperature, and it's produced there. And then its temperature is different around BBN because it doesn't go through the standard model thresholds at higher temperature.
Okay. Because, yeah, Daniel asked, and I thought you said that, yeah, okay. So if you assume it's in thermal equilibrium at a high temperature, so an effective is fixed, right? There's a prediction about what an effective is. The contribution of the sector to an effective.
Well, it depends. So the standard model also has thresholds which heat it. And so if it's coupled to the standard model at those thresholds or not at those thresholds, it'll have a different temperature. Because the standard model will get heated.
All I'm saying is there is a range, right? What an effective is. There is a minimum value of an effective.
You mean, if I like couple before the electroweak sector or something, there's like a minimum and effective.
Yeah.
That's true. I think we are, I think one can get around that if you just have one particle, which is like, you know, a heavy particle which is long lived and then decays into this afterwards. So this is all produced from like a heavy particle or something, which could be warm. I mean, I guess the thing I'm saying is that the CMB is really not sensitive to what's happening before BBN. And so I could write a different UV completion to this model, which gives me the same cosmology.
Well, I think Mina is saying that this phi should be called at BBN, right? So at CMB perhaps it's okay, but at BBN.
But there is no. I'm just asking if you can make it more predictive. It would be nice to have a cosmological history. If you have a minimal, let's say it was a thermal equilibrium before electroweak phase transition, then the contribution to an effective would be like 1%-ish.
Maybe like the question is like, well, I guess you are probably going to say it, but like, what is the effective being like delta effective in like psi and phi, like at those times that you are going to find?
At BBN, it's negligible, so we don't consider it.
At the CMB time, like
at the CMB time. So at the CMB time, yeah, you have an effective of like 0.5. So that's the order of the neutrino temperature. I mean, so we have written down. Okay, so we have written down different models, which I can talk about after or something, but which have more UV completions. But I just sort of want to start with this model. And the point, I think, is that I could have a number of UV completions to this model, and I will still end up with the fact that the temperature is sort of insignificant at BBN as compared within the bounds of BBN. but gets heated some point between BBN and the CMB. So I guess the idea is that if we want to talk about the phase shifts, we want to compare models with no step. So that's sort of SIDR, conventional interacting radiation models. The idea is that high L modes in the CMB and the matter power spectrum enter the horizon at very early times, and so they see a different universe than modes that enter after the step. So those modes see a different and effective, basically. And so the transition is KT, which is the mode that enters at the mass of the scalar. And so before the step, you have a sort of different universe for those modes. But after the step, you have the same universe because the transition has completed. So you'll see different phase shifts related to this transition time. So I can start with the photon perturbation equation. So these are the photon perturbation equations and the solution, sort of the well-known general solution. And the important thing is these super horizon equations. So outside the horizon, the velocity is related to Hubble. And as I mentioned, because the early universe modes see different Hubbles based on the amount of radiation they have. So with and without the step, you'll see that there's a different Hubble. The idea is that modes which enter before the step see a shift in their Hubble. So this is assuming that I fix tau today. So I'm fixing the IR cosmology so that there's the taus in both models map to the same Z. But in the early universe, we have a different tau depending on which model. So it's basically a change in the initial conditions. And so you'll see that in models with the step, we have a Hubble which has this X delta tau, which is related to the different in radiations in the early universe. So when I plug this into my sort of solution for the photon perturbation modes, we find that at recombination, the high L modes that enter before the step that see the different universe have a phase shift relative to the modes that enter late. So there's this constant phase shift that's related to the difference in N effective before and after the transition. Let me just summarize. The extra interacting radiation with a step gives a step in N effective during the CMB plus a change in the sound speed and equation of state. Also this sort of phase shift for high L modes relative to the low L modes. The sort of break in the phase shift corresponds to the mass of my scalar as well. I also mentioned that for sigma 8, we need to add a coupling to the dark matter. Our dark sector includes the dark matter, and so we're just going to add, for simplicity, also a Yukawa coupling to what I'll call the dark matter, which I assume is a fermion here. Then the relevant interaction ends up being this T-channel phi exchange of my dark radiation with the dark matter. As I mentioned, what happens here is that the dark radiation transfers some momentum to the dark matter. The parameter that we're interested in is the total momentum transfer rate between the two fluids. And so that's given by gamma, basically. Sort of formally, this is just an integral over all, you know, the phase space, including the initial and final state particles and their corresponding phase space distributions. But we can understand a lot about the cosmology by just looking at the temperature scalings. Basically, in the UV, before the scalar decays, I have this T-channel exchange of my chi and my dark radiation. So this is the dark matter, dark radiation interactions. And this goes like T squared over M. And then, of course, again, just like before, once the scalar decays, we can integrate that out. And now we get that the momentum exchange rate is suppressed by powers of T over M phi. So basically, the dark matter, dark radiation interactions also sort of shut off when the scalar decays.
Can I ask you something? So the fermion, the fermion does not have a chiral symmetry because you couple into the scalar into the dark matter.
This would break the supersymmetry.
Get a mass from somewhere, either from the. I mean, I can see diagrams that where you get the mass. I don't know if the mass is big.
For the fermion.
For the radiation, for your radiation, which is the fermion, right? Doesn't it get a thermal mass either?
A thermal mass from.
From just like loops of. Even the four fermion interaction, I guess.
With a scalar, in that would be suppressed, or that would be really suppressed, right?
So yeah, there's a diagram with the scalar, which I guess is like two loops, and it's suppressed by the quartic of the scalar. That's very small.
Yeah. So
there's no chiral symmetry. So I wonder if there's some other diagram that I'm missing that gives a mass to this guy. Then it's not radiation anymore.
Any mass that you get would be much smaller than the temperature of the sector, right? Because it would have to involve the scalar propagator.
Yeah, that's the only source of chiral symmetry, I guess. Chiral symmetry breaking.
So the thing we care about is the momentum transfer rate. But of course, in cosmology, we care about the momentum transfer rate, but compared to Hubble, the expansion. So in radiation domination, it goes like T squared. And so we find that the momentum transfer rate is sort of, so gamma over H is constant before the mass scale, and then after it shuts off quite quickly. An example, if the scalar was massless, you'd find that this interaction sort of shuts off near equality when the Hubble scaling changes versus at the mass scale. I just want to talk sort of briefly about how one can solve the growth of the dark matter perturbations to give you a sort of effective form for how the matter power spectrum is suppressed. So generally, the dark matter interaction perturbation equations give you this term with some source term, which is a function of the gravitational potentials and the photon stuff. And we can get an approximate solution, assuming that gamma over H is much, much smaller than H, one, because we are always considering that this is all the dark matter, and so the couplings necessarily have to be quite weak. So we can solve the homogeneous equation and then use the Green's function with the source term. And we get this usual logarithmic growth during radiation domination, but then also this suppression, which is related to the dark matter, dark radiation interactions. And so This is the plot that we produce with class, just to show again. We expect that the suppression is smooth suppression in log k, and the slope is given by the interaction rate between the dark matter and the dark radiation. And the, as I mentioned, the shutoff, so this is compared to a model in which you don't have any dark matter, dark radiation interactions, but you have this extra radiation. And so the suppression is controlled by the mass of the scalar. And so the shutoff, so the interaction shuts off at some K mode, and that's the K mode which enters when the temperature reaches the mass. So you see that in the IR, it's flat. And then for Ks much larger than K shutoff, you find a logarithmic suppression. And then just to show what the difference is, so this is now compared to a model in which the mass of the scalar is taken to be zero, so I have no step. Then I find that, as I mentioned, the shutoff is controlled when T dark equals M phi. So we can basically change the place where the suppression starts. And this is sort of key for solving the CMB as well as H naught, because generally in models where you don't have a massive particle, then the interactions continue at late times until equality. And so that means that you affect these modes as well, which the CMB is quite sensitive to. But here now we have that the interaction is controlled by the scalar mass. Okay, now just to summarize sort of our model, we started with a supersymmetric theory, which we found to be work with H naught. So we found it worked better than just interacting radiation on its own. And then we added this interaction with the dark matter for solving sigma 8. And so the parameters that we have are the interaction strength between the dark matter and the dark radiation, ZT, which is the redshift at which the temperature of the dark sector reaches the mass of the scalar, and then N effective in the IR, which is, I guess, related to the overall temperature of this dark sector. And then we'll talk a little bit about the data that we use. So we consider initial data set, which is just Planck. So this is CMB, BAO, and Pantheon. So this doesn't include the direct measurements of H naught and a sigma 8. And Planck lensing, to some degree, gives a measure of the overall amount of matter. So we sort of include that in the S8 data set. And so the relevant models that we want to compare are Lambda CDM and SIDR plus. So this is interacting dark radiation with dark matter, but there's no step. So this is just the limit in which our scalar is massless. And then WZDR, which is the model we're talking about, where we have a step in the dark radiation. And so these are sort of our results. So I'm showing the initial plot that I had of Lambda CDM with the different priors. So D is the data set that I mentioned. So it just includes the CMB plus BAO and supernova. And then DHS is sort of including all the data. So additional priors on the direct measurements of H naught and sigma 8. And so we find that the step is sort of crucial if one wants to simultaneously resolve both tensions. So if you go to a higher H naught region in SIDR models without a step, we find that the preferred interaction strength is too weak to really affect S8. But in WCDR, we can go to larger radiation, but also larger interaction strengths. And this is related to the fact that I mentioned that the interaction shuts off at the mass of the scalar.
So I guess I have kind of a cautionary statement and a question that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
The cautionary statement is just to note that the S8 measurements that come out of these weak lensing surveys isn't quite a direct measurement and can be pretty model dependent for some cases, definitely not to ineffective. Have you looked at all about how this kind of model might affect the S8 measurements and or how that like more direct measurement of structure might help you constrain this?
So we are currently doing fits to measurements of the matter power spectrum at different scales, so including Lyman alpha, forest, and the halo mass function and stuff. And so this was really more of a first step. We did just use the value of S8 versus actually fitting to the full shape because we saw in many papers which have very similar sort of suppression of the matter power spectrum, that fitting to S8 versus just fitting to the full full shape thing doesn't actually give you much different results. I think largely because the shape is degenerate with NS, and so when you do a fit over the full cosmological stuff parameters, you can compensate for the lambda CDM dependency in the S8 value by varying NS. So another interesting result is that we find that the thing that we added here was a mass scale in our interacting dark sector, and we find that the data sets all prefer sort of a similar scale around this Z transition time, and so this is a possibly a hint that there is some new physics and the dynamics could be affecting things around this scale. And so if we have a dynamical interacting dark sector with some scale, we expect to see sort of that the fit might prefer things around this transition, so mass scales like that. And then if you're interested, so the tension we've quantified with something called a QD map, which is a difference in the best fit chi-squareds. So a tension is not super well defined when you have like three different measurements. And so in this model, even if you had like a perfectly perfect agreement between all your results, you still expect something like a one sigma tension because now we're not just comparing two measurements, but measurements of three different observables, or two of different observables, but with different data sets. And so we find that the interacting radiation with the mass threshold is important for, as I said, simultaneously solving both tensions, but seems to also fit the CMB data better than the CMB, than lambda CDM as well. Even accounting for, of course, the extra parameters we added in our model. And so just to summarize, interacting dark sectors, I think, present some of the most natural solutions to solving both H0 and sigma 8 tensions. And so if we're looking at interacting radiation, then we think that an interesting signature to look for is a mass threshold. So in our simple model, we just look at one massive particle which decays during the CMB into lighter particles in the dark sector. And if this is also coupled to the dark matter in some way, then we can suppress the scales relevant to sigma 8.
questions?
So I was curious. I mean, okay, like, so for this, like, you know, so for this model where these interactions are suppressing the growth of the dark matter, like presumably, I guess, you know, the suppression is stronger in regions where the relative velocity between the dark matter and these fermions is large, right?
I'm sorry. Say like,
it was too many words. So in regions where the relative velocity between the fermions and the dark matter is large.
Mm-hmm.
In those regions, should we expect a stronger suppression of the dark matter growth?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So sort of
so you mean
like, you know, relative baryon dark matter velocity suppression of dark matter?
Yeah. Yeah. It's similar to that. So it's a coupling in the theta terms, in the velocity terms.
Yeah, so then should we then, you know, maybe look for like similar signatures, you know, in like the large scale clustering of like objects, right? You know, in the same way that this relative baryon dark matter velocity effect can give you, you know, like you know, bias terms that trace the relative velocity field. So then similarly, should I expect that, you know, that to happen here as well? But instead of like, you know, BAO-like features, this would be like the dark acoustic oscillation showing up in.
So the interaction does shut off sort of before equality. So I don't know if we have enough structure at that point to really care about the first thing you mentioned, right? So the interactions are significant sort of earlier in the time before we have really high density and.
Yeah, but equality. Like a factor of, I don't know, like few, I guess, before, before CMB last scattering, right? You know, therefore, okay, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it would be interesting maybe to fit to what other data. Yeah, I'm not sure how significant it would be, but obviously that depends on the parameters. But so the coupling is also quite weak. So it's like, you know, gamma over H is about a factor of like, 10 to the negative 2. This is a fairly weak coupling, so I'm not sure if you would expect to see.
Right, but you're trying to explain the SA tensions. Therefore, you are overall suppressing the, you know, the power spectrum by some minor Mach 5 or something.
So we are fitting.
The suppression isn't the same everywhere. It's stronger in regions where the relative velocity is large and weaker in regions where the relative velocity is smaller. Therefore, that might then produce interesting signatures of this, I'm saying, making it distinctive compared to other models.
I'm not saying it wouldn't look different at different scales or something like that. It would look different from lambda CDM at different scales and at different times. I think this is the dominant constraint. Is the CMB and the matter power spectrum stuff that we've looked at now. We are also looking at higher K stuff, which would be more sensitive, obviously. So the Lyman alpha data and stuff like that. But we would also see changes, yes, there. Yeah.
Actually, your gamma speed is not ruled out by Lyman alpha because it's already at 1 inverse megaparsec, well, H or 1. It's already like better, third, maybe even more, 30 or 40% suppression. Isn't that already in tension with Lyman alpha? Because then it keeps going down in Lyman alpha, just proceeding further to the right.
We found that it was not in. I mean, so yeah, this is just a fit to the CMB. Our Lyman alpha, when fitting to the Lyman alpha data, we also do get a slightly different slope, but not significant enough.
Just to follow up on this point, yeah. Like K of like 5 or 10, you're saying that this delta B over P would not be of order like -1. It would.
But the Lyman alpha, like if there's power suppression of the order of 50% between like K of between 1 and 5 or 1 and 6.
So yeah, I mean,
I thought, but maybe I misread.
Well, so all the Lyman alpha bounds that we know are for warm dark matter models. And so when they say, oh, this much suppression at this K, that corresponds to a certain warm dark matter model. But the warm dark matter model actually has like a much steeper slope, and the the limit is coming from actually higher k. So at high k, these deviate significantly, so that the warm dark, the like suppression things you're talking about, you know, something like, oh, it's suppressed this much at this k, is coming from warm dark matter models, as I understand. And so those have a very different behavior. I don't know of any, other rough like approximations which tell me something is ruled out. I don't know if you.
Yeah, there's some people use, it's called the area criterion, which essentially they use the power faults.
And right.
What they do is that they say, oh, this the CDM, this is what the power faults. They just compute the area, or the difference in area of the two curves, or something like that. And then they have an estimator for what's good and what's bad. And I thought like 50% deviation from the power of CDM around those scales, regardless of the model, was kind of ruled out because it's too much. But I mean, if you guys did the fit, that means that you're fine because
yeah. So I mean, people told us this too, but it was always related to, so when we looked into it, it was always related to warm dark matter models, and so the limits are actually model dependent for the suppression.
Melissa, can I ask you, how do you calculate the tension in your table? According to your plot, actually, it seems that you reconcile both tensions, but you still have a significantly high three sigma tension. Where it comes from?
You said the tension was higher than what?
No, I'm just looking at your results on plot. Can you show?
This is, the plot?
It seems that you reconcile, yes, like blue function, yes? It seems that you have trees and they say constraint. And I just wondering.
So the tension is between, a way to measure the tension is sort of the best fit chi-squared in data set D and then DHS. So the best fit here minus this, the square root of that, is a measure of tension. It's slightly different than Gaussian tension because we're trying to measure the tension not just between the CMB and Hubble, but also the CMB and sigma 8. So it's sort of a combined tension.
Okay, but did you account the prior volume effect? Did you use, maybe you use a suspicious metric or some scale?
Sorry, I think you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if, did anyone else understand the question?
I was wondering whether you, how do you account for the prior volume effect? What metric? What method did you use? Is it suspicious metric or some different metric?
So the prior volume is what he said?
I think he said prior volume.
And metric.
No. I mean, how you just calculate the tension practically between the two data sets?
It's the difference in the best fit chi squared between fitting to these two tension. So in the limit that you have, you know, perfectly Gaussian posteriors, then it's what you expect. But if you have slightly non-Gaussian things, then it's a measure of the separation between those two.
Yeah, so I got it. You don't account for the
prior. We don't account for the prior volumes. No, there isn't there. We there. Yeah.
I got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
How are you including CMB lensing in your likelihood? Like, are you using the power spectrum of your model? Any thread shift?
The CMB lensing. Yeah. So we include a fit to the CMB lensing, which is predicted based on what your cosmological model is. So it gives you, what you expect a pattern, whatever prediction of matter you have, gives you some CL phi phi term in like our theory computation, and then you just fit to that.
Yeah.
But and then the fit also includes S8, so one's using the same amplitude.
Yeah, okay, so the S8 is a prior, but the CMB lensing you're actually, the P of K at each redshift that you're integrating over is the, I mean, I guess I'm saying you could, what you're doing for the CMB lensing, you could have also done for DES and kids.
What do you, oh, predict the actual matter power spectrum?
Yeah.
Right, so that's what I was saying.
The matter power spectrum for CMB lensing, but not for the galaxy lensing surveys.
Right, yeah, so the galaxy lensing surveys is a lot more complicated, and so as I mentioned, we haven't seen evidence that that using S8 was not fine for now. But once we get out to different scales, yeah, we do need to fit. Yeah.
Just to piggyback on that, not to say, I think probably what you're doing is fine here, but I would encourage you to maybe take a look at that, and that it's possible doing a full fit to these alternatives might be able to add some interesting information for these kind of models. And that just the mental reference I have is I know that the DES data is able to place some constraints on like the presence of light sterile neutrinos in EV scale mass and how that suppresses structure, which might have a little bit of a similar phenomenology here. And so it might be exciting.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, so massive neutrinos, right, sterile, you're talking about massive sterile neutrinos,
yes.
Right? Yeah, so those give sort of a different shape that looks something like that. And so the slope tends to be steeper. And so they are more significant than the suppression we're talking about, I think, at least to the shape. This shape is like largely degenerate with NS.
Yeah, couldn't you have this model, like EV sterile plus self-interactions mimicking the same thing you're doing here?
Sorry, EV what?
Steriles. Yeah, sorry.
So sterile, yes, I mean, so. Yeah, as I said, sterile neutrinos give you a suppression which looks something like this, which has been found in the past not to fit Lyman alpha data very well. Lyman alpha data wants like something like more like a smooth suppression at larger k. And so that was the motivation for looking at.
But usually those models are.
So they give you the same sigma 8, yeah, maybe.
Okay, let me rephrase. Could you have non-sterile neutrinos at EV scale, meaning they self-interact, again, through some scalar, for example, in your model? Like, what I'm wondering is whether your psi particle can be this sterile neutrino and then have self-interactions in the same way that you're implementing your model.
Yeah, I
think that is qualitatively different from, like, the usual EV sterile neutrino story.
So we are actually writing down a more complete model of this, and so which gives you the same cosmology, and that does involve a sterile neutrino with self interactions. And so this was also, I guess, mentioned to before we were talking about how the dark sector is populated. The idea could be that the sterile neutrino has self interactions with some other dark sector. And so that comes into equilibrium with the standard model neutrinos through oscillations. And so then the energy, extra energy density that we're talking about comes from the standard model neutrinos. So they thermalize and then they can decouple when the sterile neutrino decays. So yeah, so that does also give a similar cosmology, but is a different model. And so that's why I didn't want to focus too much on the models, because I think one can write down a number of models that give you the same thing.
And in that model, is it EV scale as well, or a different scale?
It depends. So in that model, if it depends on how you want to couple to the actual standard model neutrinos. So if you want it to be free streaming during the whole CMB times, then you need it to be like KEV scale, because you need it to annihilate before the CMB. But if you wanted to look at models which are sort of interacting, which have the standard model neutrinos interacting for a little bit via this sterile sector, then it could be something like an EV scale sterile neutrino, yeah.